Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website with all the archives there. I'm on the Liberty Radio Network from noon to 2 Eastern Time weekdays. And our first guest today is a man whose name is on most of my shirts. He's the greatest parliamentarian in world history and my hero. Dr. Ron Paul, welcome back to the show. Ron, how are you doing?
Thank you, Scott. Nice to be with you again, and thank you for the exaggerations.
No, it's all very much deserved. I want to mention here, too, in your introduction, RonPaulInstitute.org, of course, is the website of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. And then, of course, there's VoicesOfLiberty.com, which is sort of the improved and expanded Ron Paul channel, which I'm very happy that they're running some of my archives there at voicesofliberty.com. Very proud of that, and thank you for that, whatever part you played in okaying that, if you did. And also, I want to make sure everybody knows that you're the author of great titles like A Foreign Policy of Freedom and The Revolution, A Manifesto. Those are my favorites of the many books that you've written that I've read. So, there we go. Very happy to have you back on the show. The big news is, like in your essay running on antiwar.com and all around the internet today, is about the new authorization to use military force. And I thought of you, actually, when I saw them saying that the administration was even officially saying that they're leaving it deliberately fuzzy, they call it, deliberately vague.
And does it really matter? Even if it's explicit, for them, it's always fuzzy. It's sort of like the Constitution. It's pretty explicit, you know, in most places, but it always ends up being interpreted in a very fuzzy manner.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, the authorization to use military force from back in 2001, they still want to keep that. That's the one that you voted for in response to the September 11th attacks, after you warned against that kind of thing, actually, and introduced a letter of mark and reprisal instead.
Right.
Can you tell the people about what a letter of mark is and what that would have been?
Well, this was used in the early history, and Jefferson used it. It's sometimes as great as a man as Jefferson was. I look back now and think that maybe he did a little bit more than I would have wanted. Anyway, he wanted to exert the notion of sovereignty of the United States, so he would use this in a naval sense. And anybody attacked an American vessel any place in the world, he wanted to even send the Navy to help. But the letter of mark and reprisal was an accepted instrument, you know, throughout the world, that if you had a letter from your government and you were sailing in a private ship, you could act as part of the government to defend yourself and to attack those who are attacking you. So it was more than just self-defense. It was more or less getting the authority from the government to do something in a very limited fashion, rather than saying, well, the only thing that we can do with the Barbary pirates is to declare war, and that was the only option. So this letter of mark and reprisal, which they put in, I guess they were thinking of things like this, to limit it. And of course, there was a lot of hang-ups with that authorization, and they didn't, you know, in 2001, that was actually totally abused, because that was directed at those people who actually participated in 9/11. But nevertheless, they went much, much further than that, and that is when I started thinking about letter of mark and reprisal. Yeah, because, you know, even though we so often can talk about what led up to it, what led up to World War One and World War Two, once the country is viciously attacked and it's just, there's no way you can't defend oneself against it, then you don't have many choices in the matter. But I was still looking for one, and since Al-Qaeda, whoever did 9/11, wasn't a precise government. So you really can't declare war against a government. And it's sort of similar to what's going on today with ISIS. It's pretty hard to declare war against against ISIS. And that's why I got to thinking and about the letter of mark and reprisal. Maybe this could be done by a small group of people. Matter of fact, can't you just see the difference that might have occurred that, you know, they knew where bin Laden was. I don't think they really wanted to catch him because he was used as the excuse for us, you know, invading various countries and building up the military. So if he had a private force that was going to be paid to go over and get him because they had pretty good knowledge of where he was and taking care of him early on, just think of the benefits that would have come from a very, very narrowed approach to, you know, going after those people that were participating in 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, you were probably pretty much alone on Capitol Hill of having a realistic assessment of just how big of an organization Al-Qaeda was, and saw 9/11 sort of as the desperate Hail Mary kind mm-hmm. of attack that it was, rather than the believing in this giant caliphate that they said was coming to get us, but that didn't really exist out there. But they were just looking to exploit it and get away with murder. But your way,
yeah.
I agreed. I remember thinking back then, boy, if they would listen to Ron Paul, this thing would be over by Christmas.
Yeah, but you know, again, the extent of Al-Qaeda was one thing, but the nature of Al-Qaeda was something else because I still don't think it's a monolith. Yes, it looks like they're getting organized under a force in Iraq and Syria, conditions which we created. But they're still talking about 30,000. And what about the millions? How many millions of people are around that area that claim they don't like them, everywhere from Israel on to Turkey and Syria and Iran? Nobody likes them, and yet there's apparent success. So it's more than, you know, fighting a country, because there's people who support these people and at least, you know, go along with it, and they're not willing to fight them. But that's why I think it gets to be silly if they think they're going to ever declare war against ISIS. I compared this to back in the 50s and the 40s or so, declaring war against communism. Well, you can declare war against the Soviet Union, but you can't declare war against communism because it's pervasive. It's all over the place. And people who are angry at us now and have been radicalized and feel desperate, they do want to do, they're anxious to do something. And I think right now there's a real question about the 20,000. You know, everybody accepts, well, how many people are on the way to Syria? 20,000. You know, it's going to go from 30 to 50,000 in one day, and we're going to be in that much trouble. So that's the reason we have to vote for more authority and more weapons. It's just the biggest mess I can conceive of in foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it's true that when you talk about listing off all the people who are their enemies in the region who are against them, you include everybody they've conquered, too, or pretty much everybody they've conquered, because we've seen how these guys acted in the past, where it was the Sunni-based insurgency themselves, their allies, that turned on Al-Qaeda and got rid of them back in 2006 and 7. And
right.
So, and they're such horrible guys. They obviously, you know, have no concept of, you thought America was bad at counterinsurgency. They have no concept of hearts and minds whatsoever, apparently.
Yeah.
They're happy to turn everyone against them. So
it really hurts us who are trying to get the people to understand what's really going on, because all you have to do is have one person burned to death or one people beheaded, and they don't think about the 60 that were beheaded in Saudi Arabia, you know, last year, and how Saudi Arabia may well have been instrumental, especially in the financing of 9/11. These kind of things, it just sort of distract, and the people concentrate on this. But that's all part of the war propaganda. But nobody, and if we would suggest, well, how would you feel if you were out, you know, at a funeral, and lo and behold, a cruise missile was misplaced, and they killed my whole family, or they killed my cousin or my friends, how many people would feel outraged about that? But nobody wants to look at it that way, no matter how many people have died at the hands of our foreign policy, and there have been many. Some estimate it could be 1 million Iraqis died since we've been involved.
Hold it right there, Dr. Paul. We'll be right back, everybody, with Ron Paul after this. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. Are you a libertarian and or peacenik? Live in North America? If you want, you can hire me to come and give a speech to your group. I'm good on the terror, war, and intervention, civil liberty stuff, blaming Woodrow Wilson for everything bad in the world, Iran, central banking, political realignment, and, well, you know, everything. I can teach markets to liberals and peace to the right. Just watch me. Check out scotthorton.org/speeches for some examples and email me scott@scotthorton.org for more information. See you there. All right, you guys. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm on the line with the great Dr. Ron Paul, anti-war activist. And we're talking about the past and future of the war on terrorism, really, and sorry about the heartbreak interrupting you there, Dr. Paul, but where we left off, you were talking about a little bit of that put the shoe on the other foot kind of thing. And,
yeah.
You know, it's so important that, as I saw in a recent interview you did with Newsmax TV, where you were basically explaining, hey, history was already going on before September 11th happened. Reminded me of the talk you gave on C-SPAN in 1998. A warning during Operation Desert Fox, the bombing campaign against Iraq, that this is the kind of thing that could lead to terrorist attacks against us and that kind of thing. A few different examples of that before September 11th. And the Newsmax interview, I was thinking, if only you said it was Bill Clinton's policies that led to this, then maybe he, because he almost understood, you know, that the 1990s
yeah.
existed. It maybe made a little bit partisan. Maybe the Republicans could get their head around that maybe it didn't all just start because the Quran said kill whitey or something
right.
like that, but maybe America had done something to get us into this mess. Our government had done something to get us into this mess.
It's really amazing how much partisanism there is, and yet the parties are the same. You know, they all believe in the foreign policy of intervention and the Federal Reserve and welfare and spending and deficits and central economic plan and all that. Yet they really do fight tooth and nail. But I think that's part of the things that they've been snowed on. I mean, the hardcore Republicans and hardcore Democrats give up all their beliefs when it becomes a partisan thing. I came across that when we were fighting these wars, and Dennis Kucinich, who's an honest progressive Democrat, I could work with him and other Democrats. But too often there were a bunch of the Democrats that worked real hard with us to try to stop Bush's war, but immediately wouldn't say boo to Obama. And now if I come out and say, well, you know, I sympathize, and I think I did that on Newsmax one time, that I sympathize with Obama's statement about, hey, why more sanctions on Iran right now? Why not let us talk a little bit about it? And when you listen to his words, I don't know how sincere he is, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt, because I'd much rather him wanting to talk to the Iranians rather than saying, well, it's time to bomb. I guess we'll put McCain in charge of all this and let him go ahead. But then they come down hard on you. You know, the conservatives come down hard on you. They say, oh, you're a Bush lover, or you're a Obama lover. And then if you say something about, why don't we have an understanding of what's going on in Ukraine? Oh, you're just a Putin lover. You know, Putin, you say anything which tries to explain why there's a civil war going on there and why NATO's fighting Russia, then they, of course, want to destroy your argument only by, character assassination. But that's the way things have been for a long time, and the only way we can confront that is with as many facts as we can get out there, and shows like yours and what we all try to do. And fortunately, we have more ability to do this now than in the old days. It used to be very difficult for our side, and with people like Snowden around, it becomes even easier for us. But there's still a lot of ignorance out there, and there's a lot of need to just go along. You can imagine how the zombies will follow Hillary once she gets rolling.
Right. Yeah, we saw that with the recent Washington Times series on the Libya war, where almost uniformly the conservatives are just as bad as her on it, the Republicans, and so they don't want to make much hay of it, even though it's in their newspaper, the Washington Times there, and the liberals don't want to say anything about it, even though that series is just absolutely huge, the scandal behind how, you know, even the Pentagon tried to stop her, but nobody could in getting us into that thing.
But even the strongest critics from the Republicans aren't saying, well, you know, this could have all been avoided if we wouldn't have decided that we had to get rid of Gaddafi at this particular time. I mean, we were in there, we messed it up, and look at what's there now. Total chaos. But it's either going to be they didn't use enough force, or Hillary screwed up by using the force that she did have, and her policies weren't correct. But they never look at the overall policy of the downside of foreign interventionism.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, back when, I don't know, 10 years ago, when they were pushing all this stuff, they kept threatening that this Islamo-fascist caliphate is getting us, right? As you were talking about before, inflating Al-Qaeda into this almost, you know, Soviet Empire-sized, you know, thing that needs to be battled. It was a fantasy of bin Laden's. It was a fantasy of George Bush's. And yet, it seems like that kind of is what has replaced the old Ba'ath regime in the predominantly Sunni parts of Iraq and Syria now with this guy, Baghdadi, who is, for intents and purposes, bin Laden himself up there on the balcony like Mussolini, declaring himself the caliph and all this kind of thing. So just playing devil's advocate as best I can here, yeah. Dr. Paul, is it possible that maybe we need to fight one more real good war here against these particularly heinous guys, the guys that Bush pretended Saddam was, and only then maybe quit?
I'm not quite ready to go in and try to clean up the mess with our money and our troops. But I do think they're stronger. They seem to be more organized. But that's not so much that their philosophy is winning out, that they're such they get in such support, but they're getting support out of default, out of our failure. It was sort of, how did we beat the Soviets? We didn't beat them by, you know, military might. We beat them by them beating themselves because they had a non-viable system. But the more we get involved, the more we enhance our enemies. Because, you know, the biggest thing is the incentive. The more we're blamed for everything that goes wrong and everybody that dies over there, and now it'll be Ukraine and elsewhere because we are involved. And most of it's justified, but some isn't justified. But we can be the whipping boy, and they can blame us. But then, even in a practical sense, I can't believe they do it on purpose, but sometimes it's so stupid, it seems like it is, that we send, like sending weapons into Syria because we had to get rid of Assad. Well, they didn't even, and then they listened to McCain. Oh, I know who the good guys are. We'll send them weapons. Now, who would have ever guessed that there was chaos over there and the weapons might end up in the hands of somebody that we don't like? So we incentivize them and we give them their weapons. I mean, look at how many weapons and energy that we ignited in Afghanistan, and how the CIA supported the radicalization of Wahhabism, you know, in Saudi Arabia. So I think it's if one argues it looks like they're stronger than ever and it looks bad. I think it's a mere reflection of our stupidity and the failure of our side presenting an alternative philosophic system, and that's where our downfall is. So I don't think ISIS is something that you attack militarily. I think we didn't defeat the Soviets that way. We couldn't. And they had already killed 100 million. And we became allies of theirs. But it was defeated philosophically, and I think that's what has to happen. But it can't be if we're going to finance them and do enough harm that all it does is they don't. I'm sure there's still some good feeling in that part of the world for us, but I think everything we do, it diminishes the good feeling for America that used to exist.
Yeah, very good point. All right, again, everybody, that's Dr. Ron Paul at the Ron Paul Institute. That's ronpaulinstitute.org and also voicesofliberty.com. And I'm under the impression, Dr. Paul, that you actually have a new project in the works coming out. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Well, I have several, and I'm not quite ready to. I do have a book on war that I want to get out, and I think we're going to be modifying the channel and our broadcasting, but it's not quite ready yet.
Okay, well, that's great to know, though, a new book coming out about the war.
Well, it's war as an issue rather than a war. You know, it's written from a personal viewpoint, from my early remembrance of World War II and all the things that how did I become so anti-war? It wasn't that I had it in one single day, and it was as the years went on, I became stronger. And of course, in Washington, it seems like some people become more enamored by the establishment. But the longer I was in Washington, the more adamant I was against the establishment, especially of the wars. And it hasn't hurt me for my arguments that I did spend some time in the military. So it's a lot more difficult for the attacks on me that they can put on others. But that will be out someday as soon as I get it ready.
Okay, great. Well, certainly looking forward to that. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Scott.
All right, y'all. That's the great Ron Paul. He's at ronpaulinstitute.org and voicesofliberty.com. The books are The Revolution, A Manifesto, and The Fed, and A Foreign Policy of Freedom. That's a collection of foreign policy speeches that Dr. Paul gave starting, I believe, in the late 70s and then all the way up through the early 2000s. Which is such a great read. You got to get your hands on it. Foreign Policy of Freedom. And we'll be right back after this.
Hey, Al Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes, Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.